Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine, and this is Get the Funk Out. Before we kick off the show, I know this has been a week that we never would have imagined. So much grief and fear and heartbreak, so many tragedies. And at 9:30, I am taking callers. I posted something briefly in a couple places. And if you want to call in and share a small act of kindness you witnessed, or you're going to offer a moment of connection maybe that helped you feel less alone, how you're choosing compassion in this challenging time between what happened with in Australia to Brown University to the Reiner family. it's been unbelievable, beyond words. So your story doesn't have to be too big. You know, it can just be a small moment or something you'd like to share, just something brief, I would ask. The number to call in at 9:30 is 949-824-5824. That's 949-824-5824. We can talk about kindness, community, how you stay lifted and connected after tragedy. And I did put some resources on my show blog, which is getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. Okay, without further ado, I have Dr. Ellen Broughton standing by, and she has written a book with Dr. Hilary Bush called The Motivation Mindset Workbook, helping teens and tweens discover what they love to do. So if you are a UCI student, maybe you have a sibling, maybe you have a cousin who is a teen or a tween, this might be for you. And, you know, there is so much pressure right now in the world, academically, social comparison, expectations, to have it all figured out at a young age. And many parents and educators worry when a child seems unmotivated. But what if motivation isn't about pushing harder? And what if it's about understanding what lights a child up from the inside? So my guest, Dr. Ellen Broughton, is a clinical psychologist and author of the Motivation Mindset Workbook. And she is joining us right now. Good morning.
Good morning. Hello.
Hello. How are you? Thank you so much for calling in.
I'm thrilled to be here.
So I want to dive in and ask you what motivated you to work with Dr. Hilary Bush to create this Motivation Mindset Workbook.
That's a great question. I have to go a little bit back into the past. And I am a researcher in learning differences and ADHD. And I became interested in a part of what sort of like can be a impediment to them, which is processing speed. So how quickly they can process information in this really fast-paced world we live in. And as those kids grew up, I realized that a lot of them are having trouble sort of making it into adulthood, and probably because of a lack of motivation. So I started researching that and wrote a book a few years ago called Bright Kids Who Couldn't Care Less. Mm-hmm. And we decided, Dr. Bush and I decided that, you know, parents need a little bit more guidance and kids need a little bit more practical sorts of solutions than you might find in a book. So that's why we created the workbook, to really give parents and kids and even teachers a good idea about what do we do. So we've identified the problem.
Okay.
And we know generally how to fix it, but actually what can we do day to day?
Definitely. Well, I think it's great. It's very timely. There's so much pressure and burnout. And I was just mentioning to listeners before I brought you on, it's been one heck of a week.
And yeah.
It's an understatement.
We are bombarded with news. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I think even going back 5 years to the pandemic, and mm-hmm. I started becoming interested in this topic in 2019, I thought, oh, it really will just apply to a small group of kids who are having trouble in school or trouble, you know, making it into adulthood. And we're all kind of unmotivated these days. I don't think we've really processed the trauma that happened during the pandemic.
Absolutely.
Our lives are completely different.
Yes.
And it's hard to stay motivated and know what gives us meaning these days.
It sure is. So you are based out of Mass General Hospital.
Exactly. And Harvard Medical School,
yes. Harvard Medical. And where did you get your PhD? I'm just curious. I went to BU.
Oh, I went to Colorado State University and then did my internship and postdoctoral fellowship at Mass General and Harvard. So I was
Fantastic.
A transplant from Colorado and have been in Boston for 26 years now.
Oh, wow. So, well, it's wonderful. I love what you're doing. And I also want to add to the fact that you mentioned the pandemic, and there was already, as you know, a mental health crisis and studies have shown it, the pandemic exacerbated it.
It totally did. Our own research showed that in almost every area we assessed of emotional functioning, kids did poor during the pandemic and after the pandemic. So we're talking about just being, you know, not just more unmotivated, more anxious, more difficulty socially, just name it. The only thing that did not show to be significantly different was impulsivity, which kind of shows that those impulsive kids are just impulsive. That's not a trait that's associated with motivation and with, you know, sort of like trauma. But you're right. We're still seeing that these days. And I will tell you my own practice and those psychologists and mental health professionals who are doing what I do were all really overwhelmed with calls. I think it hasn't gotten better based on sort of boots on the ground experiences.
And for people to assume that just because we were back in person and everything was back to normal, it wasn't normal. And there was such trauma, as you know, for instance, if you were already introverted, right, you didn't mind being, you know, in your little cave. However, so many people went through so many different experiences of all ages, different changes, whether, you know, you decided you didn't love the people under your roof or you didn't like what your life was. And then being back in person, if you were already introverted or had social anxiety, it was worse, right?
Oh, so much worse. And we lost, everybody lost something.
Yes,
everybody.
That's right.
Some people lost a lot. They lost people they loved. Mm-hmm. They didn't have the opportunity to mourn them and grieve for them in ways that we know are helpful to get over that.
Yes.
And we missed so many of those landmarks that make it so that they're just so important for us to move on. So even something like graduations, proms, first experiences, you know, all those sorts of things that just weren't happening. And we never really took the time to grieve that. And, you know, you mentioned how busy our world is and how much we have to cope with just in a week's time, the amount of information we have to process, that we're not really spending the time. We don't have those spaces in our lives anymore to sort of mourn what we didn't get.
Right. Yes. So can we jump? I know I want to get back to your book, but I want to ask your opinion about social media and technology, because I know that there is a loneliness epidemic and there's such a tremendous lack of connection, human connection. And I'm seeing a lot of things posted internationally about, you know, these events where there's no phones allowed. Do you think if teens and tweens took a break from social media, you know, put the phone down and connected, things would be a little better as far as their mental health?
I do think so. I'm not positive we would see a one-to-one, you know, perfect correlation with this. But I do think, like, Australia has just recently banned social media in kids 16 and under or under 16.
I know.
And I think that when we look at the data on social media, it's not really great for kids. Phones are not terrific for them. The schools that have taken the phones out of the classrooms show almost universal positive results if we're talking about behavior, attention, fewer calls to the principal's office. Every measure that we've looked at, taking phones out of the classroom really helps kids. And I wonder at times if at some point we're going to look back and say, I can't believe we let 12 and 13 and even 14-year-olds do social media, because it's addictive.
Yes.
It's oftentimes resulting in more anxiety, more feeling left out, social issues. And so I think probably restricting it is the right way to go. And we've got to think about it like we think about other things, like cigarettes and alcohol. It's an addicting sort of thing that we need to regulate in kids who can't regulate it for themselves.
Great point. Thank you for that. I know that was a little path we didn't expect to take in this conversation, but I wanted your insight, so thank you. So let's talk about how you mention in your book helping kids discover what they love. How do we find joy? How is that possible with young people?
Well, one of the things we need to do, and I talk about this because it's essential to motivation. Like, motivation is what the reason why we do the things we do. And we do things that we love to do. It's one of those essential ingredients. And one of the things is to just ask the question is, what do I like doing? Now, that seems so simple. But I have asked this question of parents, and some of them will say to me, don't ask my child that. I'm afraid of what they'll say. Ooh. And it's funny, you brought up social media. That's the one thing they're afraid. All they're going to say is they love playing video games or they love being on social media. And most kids don't say that. They talk about the things that they like to do. And sometimes what we have to do is they might have lost that ability to even have that insight. We need to talk about, well, what did you like to do? When was the best time? What are the sorts of things that you used to like doing? And that can be very helpful, sort of taking stock of what made them happy in the past. I don't think our culture does a very good job of keying into pleasure. We're not a pleasure-oriented society in general, and that's why we go to France and Italy and the Greek countryside on our vacations, because it's places that are infused with pleasure. Mm-hmm. So we're not used to, as adults who take care of kids, giving them good examples of that or even talking to them about that. We enroll them in activities, but we don't necessarily talk about whether that's giving them happiness.
It's so interesting. I also find that, especially with adults, like we lose that sense of play and wonder and awe. And in some of the things I've done, and I won't share this all this now, maybe we connect another time, but I noticed that bringing in nostalgic games and activities really bring a lot of joy.
Absolutely, they do. And, you talked about the loneliness epidemic. Being with other people gives us joy, too, even mm-hmm. if we're an introvert. An introvert still wants to connect. They just don't want to do it in a party of, 50
yes.
people.
Exactly.
But that brings us joy, too, and we're doing less of that. And I think, too, the other area of keying into what gives us pleasure is practicing gratitude. Mm. So really thinking about, if it's hard to say, I don't even know what gives me pleasure anymore, well, what are you grateful for? And usually, even if we're in the sort of the depths of of depression, we can usually find something that makes us grateful. And research really shows us that incorporating gratitude into daily life helps with anxiety. It helps with feelings of depression. It involves shifting our attention on purpose to the things we have instead of focusing on what we don't have. And that helps us key into pleasure and also remind us what keeps us motivated.
Definitely. And it can be something really simple. For instance, I was sick recently. I had bronchitis for several weeks, and I thought, just breathe. This is temporary. Thank goodness this is not a long-term thing. I'm very fortunate. You have all kinds of things that you can focus on, big or small.
Exactly. And I think that's what we tend to think of, those big things, when we think about what's a child's aptitude or what makes them happy or what are they good at doing, instead of the small things like, oh, I'm sick, but I have my cat here on my mm-hmm. bed and I can pet my cat.
Yes.
And that's really what gratitude is about. It's about recognizing that things can be beautiful even when things are hard.
Yes.
And appreciating the bad things too.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, not only the bad things, I don't mean to sound like glib or something, bad things happen and
yes.
that wonderful. But usually we can key into something, and your example is absolutely perfect of like, well, you know what? I'm glad I can breathe, and I know I'm going to get better. And all of those things are really important.
Yes, absolutely. So give us some maybe key takeaways in the book that you'd like people to know that have siblings that are teens or tweens or parents that are listening.
Well, the three things that I talk about when I talk about motivation that are important are aptitude, pleasure, and practice. And aptitude is really about who am I, what am I good at? Pleasure, we've talked about already, what makes me happy? And practice is really about how can I get more of what makes me happy? And those three things, the intersection of those three things, is really where motivation happens. So we've got to be able to articulate, who am I? Where's my aptitude right now? Where are my skills strong? Where do my strengths lie? And then also think about, where's my pleasure right now? And then how do I get more of what makes me happy? And that really, you know, that really takes some analysis of who am I? How do I make my schedule better so that I have more time to do this? And how do I key into pleasure? And so all of those things, one of those things is not enough. We've got to be able to think about those three things together. Like, I'm good at this, I like this, but I don't have time to do this. And that's a key issue for a lot of kids. They might know who they are. Their parents want them to do something else. They want them to be the star soccer player, and the kid wants to be the chess champion. And those are the sorts of things that get in our way. Mm-hmm. And then also just life gets in our way. We're overscheduled. We tend to, you know, overindulge and not give kids enough responsibility. And so they have too much pressure in their lives, but not enough responsibility to sort of figure things out on their own. And those are other things that get in the way of our ability to stay motivated.
Yes. What I also find interesting, and by the way, thank you for sharing that, is that in a time of technology, I feel that technology has replaced that relationship at times with parents. So kids might not be eating with their parents, might be eating with their phone. And then it becomes harder for that parent to connect with that teen, because let's face it, it's really challenging to connect with teens, and they have this whole life, and they, you know, rightfully so, they don't want to share everything with their parents. But so do you have advice for parents that feel like, or even a sibling, an older sibling, they can't get through to that teen or tween, and they really know something is going on, but they don't know how to approach it?
Yeah, I think this is a great question. There are a few things that I would just say right off the bat. One is, you need rules. You are the parent paying for that cell phone. Those are your rules for the cell phone.
Yeah.
So that means no cell phones in the bed after a certain time, maybe no cell phones in the bedroom at all. And in fact, a lot of people say there should be no screens in the bedroom.
No screens.
And
yes.
But definitely not after a certain time of day, whether it's 8 o'clock, 10, 9, 10 o'clock, depending on the age of your child. I also think that screens should never be used as a babysitter. It should be a very special thing. I see way too many kids in a stroller as they're walking down the street
it's
in
terrible.
Boston or New York on an iPad when there's plenty of things to look around them. And so really thinking about how much time your child is spending on that should be a very, it's like candy. It should be only once in a while when you really have a special treat, like, for instance, on an airplane or something like that. So screens out of the bedroom. Make sure your child's getting enough sleep. Monitor their social media. And if you don't have a policy at school that keeps phones out of the school, be one of those parents who supports that. Because it's funny, but it's been parents who've been the most anti-taking cell phones out of the classroom. And they have some good reasons for that, because they like to be in touch with their kids, because things like school shootings happen. And they, you know, they worry about their being able to get in touch with their child. But the data shows that it's really a very good thing. And the less you use the phone, the less you're addicted to the phone.
Yes.
And it's funny, you don't miss it as much when you're not on it as much.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole other show about phones and safety. And
Yes.
What else would you like to leave listeners with about this book, Dr. Broughton?
Well, I mentioned a couple of things. One is that, you know, the kids have too much pressure and not enough responsibility. So think about that. Kids love having responsibility, but that's not overscheduling. That's giving them something to do that they feel very competent doing. So sometimes an unmotivated child in school makes a great worker, a great, you know, they're great at one of those first-time jobs, working at a coffee shop, an ice cream stand, those sorts of things. So give them the opportunity to have that ability to feel responsible for something. Kids love that, and it definitely generates more motivation to do other things. And then I would also say, just sort of as a parting word, love the child you have, not the child you wish you had. And oftentimes problems with motivation are because we want our child to be something who they're not, instead of appreciating the gifts that they have. And so that's just something to really think about.
Yes. One thing I noticed in your workbook is there's a section, feeling overscheduled. And I think about how I remember having a conversation with a parent, and they said, oh, my child's doing great. They have a 4.6, and they on the team and they're doing this and they're that and they all these clubs and AP and I thought, well, how's their mental health? Because their mental health might not be a 4.6.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I see a lot of that. And, you know, there are students. I don't want to say that there aren't. There are overachieving students who love that. But it is the rare student who does.
Yes.
And most kids just, I mean, I've seen so many kids burn out in their freshman, sophomore year of college who had exactly the same sort of life that you just described. Mm-hmm. They're tired. They're overworked. They're stressed. They have no idea who they are, no idea what makes them happy. And they just look at life and say, this is the best it's going to get. I don't even know what I want. And so their mental health can suffer, and overscheduling, not enough sleep too. So the child you described is, I can almost guarantee they are not getting enough sleep. You can't maintain that kind of schedule.
Right.
And sleep is really the glue that holds us together.
And I will say this, because this is something that's related to what I do. I had mentioned to a group that, let's say you put all that pressure on that student. What happens when you go to college? They're going to break free. They are not going to be living by your rules, and they just might do the total opposite of whatever you've tried to instill in them. So teaching them those self-care lessons and taking care of themselves now before they leave the nest is so important.
Oh, it's so important. And you're right. They can go one of two ways. Just, you know, be like overwhelmed and just not want to participate, or, you know, take up drinking, you know, all sorts of things that you can do when you're in college.
Mm-hmm.
And but to a degree that they can't cope with it because they haven't had to sort of manage those sorts of situations. It can be a dangerous combination.
It sure can. Where can people find out more about you and your workbook?
So my website is at ellenbrottenphd.com. They can find more information there, find where to get the workbook and my other books, and they're also available at bookstores and on, you know, things like Barnes and Noble, and so they can easily order them or get them from their local bookstore.
Okay, fantastic. I want to thank you so much for calling in, and congratulations on your book.
Thank you so much for having me.
I really enjoyed this. Stand by, don't hang up, okay?
Okay.
All right, that was Dr. Ellen Broughton calling in, and she has this great workbook out called The Motivation Mindset Workbook, helping teens and tweens discover what they love to do. If you missed any part of the show, it'll be up as a podcast within an hour after I wrap. And all the information is on the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. If you don't follow our socials, we're at KUCI FM. You can also visit our website at kuci.org. And again, my show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. I am accepting pitches for new guests for the beginning of the year. I'm already filling up some of the schedule. So all you have to do is send an email to Janeane, J-A-N-E-A-N-E, at kuci.org. That's J-A-N-E-A-N-E at kuci.org. We'll take a little break, and then we will be back. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. To find out more about this talk show or other talk shows broadcasting on KUCI, log on to our website at kuci.org or check out the latest program guide.